WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. During every political campaign, we're inundated with polls. Not only are the media constantly conducting polls on the candidates are constantly conducting their own polls to assess their strengths and weaknesses, as well as their opponents, and to see which way the public is leaning on the issues. My guest, David Moore, is the author of the new book, Super Pollsters: How They Measure and Manipulate Public Opinion in America. Moore is a pollster himself. He directs the Survey Center at the University of New Hampshire, where he's also a professor. His polling results have been picked up by all the TV networks and many newspapers and news magazines. Moore told me that the way candidates use pollsters has changed in the past 30 years.
What's changed dramatically, one of the major reasons it's changed is that the primary process has become so important. In 1960, when Kennedy was running for president, the primary process was used only to indicate the potential strength of a candidate. Kennedy didn't go into the convention having gone through all the primaries and won all the delegates. He went into a few primaries so that he could show that even though he was a Catholic, he had some strength. But by 1972, after the Democratic Party had gone through a major amount of reforms and made the primary season so important, then pollsters became important because they were then used by the candidates, and one of the first candidates was George McGovern under this new system. The pollsters were used by the candidates to help the candidates figure out what messages would be most appealing to the electorate and where they should campaign, what primaries they should enter into, and so on. So it's really changed dramatically since John Kennedy ran 1960.
Let's look at today's presidential pollsters. The president's pollster is Robert Teeter, and he's working on this presidential campaign. He worked on Bush's previous campaign as well. Right. What has his strategy been in this campaign?
Well, Bob Teeter, even though he's been a pollster throughout the past two decades, is right now the campaign chairman of the Bush campaign. And the polling strategy has been mainly to determine what is the extent of the alienation that we see in the American public. I think it's clear from the Buchanan challenge that there's a great deal of alienation. And I think the polling has probably shown, and this is why we see Bush trying to cast himself as an agent of change, that people want some major change going on in government because they're tired with the way things are working right now, or not working.
Do you think it was Teeter who was responsible for the Willie Horton ads? I mean, not for creating the ads, but the impetus behind that type of ad.
Well, since the positives and negatives allow the pollsters to determine whether the ads work one way or the other, it's been very clear that the negatives of a candidate do go up if that candidate is being challenged or is the target of very strong negative advertising. In 1988, there were a series of items that Bob Teeter and that Lee Atwater, who was then the campaign chairman, wanted to test on the public. One of the items had to do with the Pledge of Allegiance, the mandatory Pledge of Allegiance bill that was vetoed by Governor Dukakis. Another one was the furloughing of Willie Horton. And through focus groups, which is a meeting of get-together of about 10 to 12 voters, and through subsequent polling, the campaign staff on the Bush side was able to determine that those two issues were very, very emotional issues for the public. And as a consequence, they then went after Dukakis. Now, the strategy was very clear, as Atwater said, based upon the polling that Teeter had done, that Bush's negatives were very high, Dukakis's positives were very high, and they knew they could not win the election campaign if they allowed that to remain. So what they wanted to do was raise the negatives of Dukakis, and the way they had to do that was engage in negative advertising, and they did.
My guest is David Moore, author of the new book, Super Pollsters, and he directs the Survey Center of the University of New Hampshire. Now, Pat Kidell, a kind of former super pollster who temporarily gave up politics,
right,
was representing Jerry Brown, and I think he might have kind of switched camps to H. Russ Perot, or he's with both of them now. I'm kind of unclear.
Yes, it's unclear.
Now, what were some of his, some of the strategies he became best known for as a pollster?
Well, Cadell was really one of the first modern pollsters. After Lou Harris worked with John Kennedy, there was some polling done by presidential candidates. But in 1972, McGovern got a unknown undergraduate from Harvard University named Pat Cadell to work on his campaign for him. Pat Cadell was got into politics then because he was very much animated, he said, by the idealism of Robert Kennedy, and he felt that McGovern was the natural heir to that philosophy. And so Pat Cadell became the wunderkind of the time with his numbers and his explanation. His major contribution was not only the numbers that he got in polling, but the fact that he had a very keen sense of strategy and a keen sense of what the American public were thinking. Now, of course, he also worked for Jimmy Carter in 1976 and Jimmy Carter again in 1980. Now, he did get out of politics in 1986, and now he's been unofficially advising Jerry Brown. I guess he hasn't been doing polls for Jerry Brown, but unofficially advising him about the extent of alienation among the American public. Now, whether he's also advising H. Ross Perot, I don't know. I haven't picked that up from the press, but he did in a recent interview praise Perot's strategy for getting into the race more than he praised Jerry Brown.
Are there any classic examples of misuse of information on the part of candidates, pollsters?
Well, I think the classic example has got to be the one that Pat Cadell himself admits was a real distortion of democracy, or a real attempt to undermine democracy. In 1986, when he was working for Senator Alan Cranston in California, he devised a strategy that would make the campaign very, very negative, so negative that it would turn off younger voters from even going out to vote. And the reason he did that, he said, was that the younger voters were much more likely to vote for the Republican candidate than they were to vote for Alan Cranston. And by becoming very, very negative, he thought he could take a candidate who he felt really did not have majority support and still allow him to win. And ultimately, he was successful. Cranston won by 2 percentage points.
So in other words, he wanted to make voters so disgusted with the whole process
yes.
that they'd stay home because he thought Cranston would benefit by a low turnout.
That's right. And he was right. At least that's the way what he says. And we know that the results were very close. And he says as a consequence of that, by the way, that he decided to get out of political polling for money. Now, the fact that he's back in, he says, is free and just providing free advice to some candidates. But he did get out officially in 1986.
My guest is David Moore, and he's the author of the new book, The Super Pollsters. He's a pollster himself. He directs the Survey Center of the University of New Hampshire. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. David Moore is my guest, author of the new book, The Super Pollsters. I'm interested in hearing how you design a question so that it accurately measures somebody's opinion and the strength of that opinion. If say for instance, you were designing a survey about public attitudes toward abortion, you could choose another subject if this one isn't a very good example. How do you phrase questions so that you know if you're really measuring it accurately?
Well, that's a really good example, Terry, because the question of abortion is one that is a very emotional one. It's been around for a long time, and you would think that people's views would be pretty stable on it. And yet the way in which the questions are worded can have an impact, even if pollsters don't anticipate early on that the question wording is going to have an impact, it can. For example, if you ask a question like, do you think it should be legal or illegal for a woman to have an abortion under X number of circumstances, you get one kind of response. But if you say, do you think the state should prevent a woman from having an abortion? Using the words, have the state prevent a woman from having an abortion, will make people much more supportive of a woman's right to have an abortion than if you say, do you think it should be legal or illegal for a woman to have an abortion? People don't want the state to prevent. And it's really interesting because we've run some experiments where half of our sample was asked the question whether or not it should be legal or illegal, and the other half was asked whether the state should prevent a woman from having an abortion. And we got on the order of 10 to 15 percentage points differences in support. So that's it's a very ticklish situation there when you're trying to come up with something or a question that's really objective because you don't really know what's the proper way to phrase it.
So which way would you go with now?
Well, I think most pollsters these days are using, do you think it would be legal or illegal? Or do you think, would you support or oppose a bill that would make it legal or illegal? They use that kind of terminology rather than state preventing a woman having an abortion. Now, in fact, of course, the side that is pro-choice are people who often commission polls in which the more strict wording is used. And when that stricter wording is used, you get more people who support the woman's rights. And the question is, what's right and what's wrong? And the answer is, neither way of asking it is right or wrong, which you tap are different dimensions of the same issue. People are really opposed to the state interfering in a woman's right to have an abortion. On the other hand, they really don't want a woman to have an abortion if it's frivolous. And those kind of conflicting views are reflected then in sometimes in different results you get from slight wording in the questions.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you know, you could easily make the argument that the state preventing a woman from having abortion is the more accurate depiction of what's happening, because if a woman wants an abortion and she can't have one, the state is preventing her.
That's correct. And you could also say that all the state is doing is making it illegal for a woman to have an abortion. You can use both phraseologies and it comes out to be the same. Let me give you another example. When we ask questions about whether people feel that there should be more or less money spent on welfare, that's one way to phrase it, or on assistance to the poor, that's another way to phrase it. Well, for welfare, there's very little support for more money for welfare, but there's about 40 or 50 points more support for assistance to the poor. Now, welfare and assistance to the poor should be considered identical in terms of what they do. But in terms of the word itself, welfare, having a very loaded connotation, it's so loaded that you just really can't use that word and get a meaningful response from the public.
I think it's fair to say that the American public has become really disillusioned with the abundance of polls, especially, you know, political ones. And obviously you think polls are valuable as a pollster yourself. And I wonder if you'd share with us what you think the values of political polling are.
Well, I think I'm sympathetic to those who say there are too many polls done by the news media, because oftentimes what happens is that instead of focusing upon issues, the press may instead focus upon the latest poll. And it's a part of a long process of focusing what's referred to as the horse race aspects of a campaign rather than upon the substantive or issue aspects. On the other hand, the problem with that criticism is that before there were media polls, the media were still interested in revealing to the readers the nature of the horse race, who's ahead and who's behind. And so if they didn't use their own polls, if they didn't commission polls, they would often take information from the campaign pollsters. As a matter of fact, Bud Lewis said that the major reason NBC went to doing its own polling was that in 1972 it felt completely manipulated by Pat Caddell working for George McGovern, who after every primary would talk about how much George McGovern had won the blue-collar vote. He said that just didn't seem likely. Here he was, a liberal Democrat winning the blue-collar vote. But they had no way to verify or to challenge that information. And as a consequence of this manipulation, in the view of the press, they develop their own polls. So I think at least the media polls do provide a check. And if there are enough of them, then all the polls have an incentive to be as accurate as possible and as objective as possible. So in that sense, I think they do provide good information, and they certainly do provide a check against manipulation by partisan groups.
David Moore is the author of The Super Pollsters. He directs the Survey Center at the University of New Hampshire. This is Fresh Air.